Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Are you ready? Are you ready for the SmackDown Review podcast? Yes, we're back on Saturdays for 1 week only, but I am Phil Chambers and I'm joined by Andrew Pollard to talk all things Blue Brand today. But before we get into it, make sure you like the subscribe to this podcast, even on wherever it is you get your podcast from, because we do daily wrestling podcasts. We do wrestling podcasts about Raw, wrestling podcasts about SmackDown, wrestling podcasts about NXT, wrestling podcasts about Dynamite, wrestling podcasts about pay-per-views, wrestling podcasts that are roundtable discussions, wrestling podcasts that are roundup of the weeks, complete with bloody quizzes, and this wrestling podcast all about SmackDown. But yeah, hi, Andrew Pollard, on a day of many, many, many releases yet again. SmackDown, the WWE somehow managed to also put on a TV show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on this Saturday, but it's a nuts night. It was like, wake up this morning and just as I was stirring, went onto Twitter and saw like, oh, Bronson Reed's trending. Like, clearly he must have debuted on SmackDown after all this talk of he's main roster down.
And it's like,
so he is trending, but he's trending for that. Oh, and so is Bobby Fish and Mercedes Martinez and Jake Atlas. And it's just like, what? And then it's like 13 releases and, Jesus, man. Then you see these stats flying around of like, this is, I think it was the 41st, well, there's 41 people have been released since June, so just over a month, and like 100 odd since April, and it's like, oh. But anyway, yes, there was SmackDown, and that's the crazy thing. These releases were happening while SmackDown was going on. Supposedly, while Adam Cole was at SmackDown meeting Vince McMahon, you've got the news that crazy. Bobby Fish, his longtime friend, is being released. That's an incentive to re-sign. Like, Jesus.
What they're thinking with the timing of this one. Like, if they think that maybe if we release everyone while SmackDown's going on, then social media will kind of be drowned by SmackDown news as well as the releases, and the releases might not get picked up on. Like, I don't know what they're thinking. Just of all the times to do it. Easy. Right when your TV show is on.
Yeah, I get the whole concept of like any sort of bad news, like, okay, purely from a PR standpoint, late on a Friday is the best time to put out any sort of bad news, because it's the hope is then it gets buried a little bit. It doesn't pick up as much traction because people are sleeping or winding down or whatever. But then it's like, yeah, but at the same time you're doing that, you realize you have like a live 2-hour broadcast going on at the same time, which lots of wrestling fans around the world, a dwindling number of wrestling fans, but still lots are watching and are on social media interacting about anyway. And then you throw in the span of 13 releases, and especially like a good 4-5 of them, like Tyler Ross as well, another, like, there's probably five that are really surprising, where, and like, yeah, the Tyler Ross one where it's like, oh cool, so this diamond mine, let's see, oh right, no, there's they're down the man already, this is going really well. And you see them all, and it's like, I don't want anybody to lose a job, but part of me is thinking like, oh, it's gonna be Roddy as well, they're gonna get rid of Roddy Strong. And it's like, just, but thankfully Roddy is still there, his wife isn't, his stablemate isn't, it's undisputed here his stablemate isn't either.
I was going to say, the person he beat last week in isn't.
And like, what the thing is as well, there was Leon Ruff and who else was it, two dudes who got released were on 205 Live last night. Like, they got released before their match actually aired. Obviously, it'd been taped in the week. And it's just like, Leon Ruff as well. That's a surprising one.
Leon Ruff, is a shame. How can you even have a 205 just, Live at this point, though? Like, with the amount of people that got rid of from that TV show. Like, can you even film that anymore?
No, part of me was thinking like, yeah, it was the last round of cuts really killed 205 Live. And then it's like, well, was it the last one or was it the one before? Because you lose track of all the releases, but it was like, Davari got let go, Tony Nese got let go. It's just like, Leon Ruff is like just such a fun underdog, fight from below, scrappy babyface where, he's not the biggest kind of, it's like he has so much of somebody that was around at the time of like the charm of the early days of the 1-2-3 kid, where it's like, you can't help but root for the guy, but we'll be rooting for him elsewhere now anyway, moving forward, somewhere
indeed.
Else. It's nuts, man.
But yeah, like we say, releases were happening. Also with SmackDown, and that's what we're really here to talk about. So hopefully a little bit brighter things to talk about than what happened behind the scenes. But yes, 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 y'all, so fresh, y'all. Snoop Dogg and Sasha Banks are indeed the best, y'all. And out comes Sasha Banks after what happened last week when she turned on Bianca Belair. And she said she was coming back to claim the spotlight that she's created and that she deserves. And then there was a big video package of her return last week. And WWE are just bloody good at these video packages. This is insane. Yeah. They're always so good. She talks about how WWE would be nothing without her and that she turned Bianca from this rookie to a champion, and she's sick of all the disrespect that's being shown, and she's come here to make Bianca pay. And right on cue, out comes Bianca Belair saying that Sasha was like begging her to face her at Mania. Like, you don't want the credit, you just don't want Bianca to shine. And then Sasha kind of leaves the ring a little bit as Bianca was like walking up to it, and Bianca had a great line of like, where are you going? You're going to take another 4 months off? Like, basically, you want this, it's on. I really, really enjoyed Bianca Belair in this segment. But then out comes Zelina Vega. Obviously, she's insulting Bianca Belair. She calls Sasha Banks a ratchet little vulture. And she says, like, and then Bianca's like sick of it all. She says, all right, Sasha, I'll see you at SummerSlam. And Zelina Vega, I'll see you tonight. Good hot opening segment, carrying on from the cliffhanger sort of last week with the turn of Sasha Banks on Bianca. I thought Bianca Belair was really good in this. Like, she was sort of sassy. She had really, really good comebacks. She had a bit of attitude about her, a bit of swagger. Sasha Banks is great because she's always bloody great in a heel role on the microphone. And I thought Zelina Vega was really good in this role too. So I was impressed with this.
Yeah, it was a good way to start. It was, like you said, it's like the production value of these, the recap videos. It's sometimes they can maybe go a little bit long, but then the other side of the coin is that if you've missed last week or this could be the first time you're tuning in, it's like, oh, right, so that's what's going on. And it always looks great.
They also
great
make it
tells a story.
Seem like the most important thing ever as well, which is really good.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I thought Sasha was great. I thought Bianca Belair... I think it was, I don't know, it could well be like her best night on the mic. It was just, there's that, just the confidence that she has now in this role where she's clearly comfortable in with a microphone in her hand. Yeah, okay, sometimes the lines with herself and with Sasha could feel a little bit overly scripted, but that's the nature of the beast in WWE, I'm afraid. But she delivered the lines well. I popped for Zelina Vega dropping the ratchet line, harking back to the glory days of NXT with Sasha's ratchet. It's like, yeah, this is cool. I'm down with that. And I think we all kind of knew as soon as Zelina Vega rocked up, it's like, right, who's she fodder for tonight? Is it going to be Bianca Belair? Is it going to be Sasha? It was going to be a showcase for one of them just to decimate poor Zelina. But no, it set the stall fine for what was to come for SummerSlam. I think we all knew that match obviously was going to happen, Belair versus Sasha. I also like the line of, with Sasha said early on about how at WrestleMania, Bianca Belair was that emotional just being in the ring with Sasha Banks, that she was crying before the match started. It's like, yeah, attention to detail, good. And I'm sure they're going to tear it down again at SummerSlam and the Zelina Vega match. Obviously, we'll get to that. It was what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. The Sasha Bianca match was one of my favorite matches of this year so far. So I'm looking forward to them repeating that at SummerSlam. But then later on tonight, it was official, sort of, I guess. We'll get to that later on. But it is going to be Zelina Vega versus Bianca Belair in a women's championship match. Or is it? I don't know, but we'll get there. But yeah, then it was time for the first match. Although Rey Mysterio was backstage first with his son, Dominic, obviously. And Ray was like sort of having a go at Dominic, talking about like, what are you doing? Like challenging Jey Uso to a match tonight. And Dominic was like, I'm just trying to do what you taught me, Dad. Like, I'm trying to get in his head. And Dominic and Ray was saying how with this match coming up at SummerSlam, like we need to be more strategic. They need the wins behind them going into the big event. And that nothing is more important than like regaining the titles and bringing this family together and things. And then Dominic was all fired up. And then at the end of it, had a nice little line to Ray just going like, oh, Dad, like, I don't need your help either. And then like walked out to the ring with a bit of a swagger.
He's not enough, I guess, is the phrase on it.
Interesting dynamic they're building between the Mysterios. I'm not entirely sure where it's going.
Yeah, and there's that like niggle, like there is that fear of like they're not, are they? They're not, because it's like Dominic is getting very sure of himself, getting very cocksure, getting very confident and cocky, and you think like you don't just leave them how they are. Well, have them just as the happy father son dynamic of Dominic under the learning tree of the legendary Rey Mysterio Jr. Don't mess with that, but.
I'm not ready for the WWE, man.
No, exactly. It's like, no.
But then it was time for Dominic Mysterio versus Jey Uso, and it was really good fun. Of course it was. It's these two, and they're always pretty entertaining when they get in the ring together. It started out, obviously, like Dominic flipping around all over the place. He did his great sort of sliding sunset flip bomb into the barricade thing that I just love. You can just watch that all day long. And then eventually, obviously, Jey gets control, and then Dom did a kind of like leg scissor takedown, but into the corner. He eventually hits him with the 619, but then that's where it all gets a bit WWE and a little bit screwy, because as Dominic's going up to the top rope to finish off Jey Uso after the 619, Jimmy kind of comes in to try and get involved, but Rey Mysterio manages to cut him off doing like a flying senton to the outside. But as all this was happening, Dominic gets a little bit distracted as he goes to splash Jey Uso. He gets hit with a super kick, and then Jey Uso hits the splash on him. 1, 2, 3. Jey Uso beats Dominic Mysterio. But yeah, like I say, a fun match, just if it just has to go WWE for the finish, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think the technical term for that Rey Mysterio counter on Jimmy Uso is the flying teabag, clearly.
Yes, definitely.
It's just like, have my balls in your face. There we go. That's one way to take him out of the match. But it was the case of the threat from Jimmy Uso was neutralized, but Dominic still lost because he got a little bit too full of himself, maybe. And I thought the match itself was really, it was a fun match. It was probably the match of the night, I'd say, before we, obviously, not to get too ahead of ourselves, but I think the super kick to win it, the super kick and the splash, the super kick looked really good from Jey Uso. And I think people as well, it's fun to realize that Rey Mysterio has been doing it a long time. Dominic Mysterio has only been wrestling for like a year, and this is only probably his fifth, sixth, seventh time in front of an audience. So to see how far along he is, he's far from the finished article, but to be as good as he is now, having been in front of fans for such a relatively short amount of time, it's like, dude's got a huge future ahead of him, and obviously ahead of him is by the looks of it a title shot at SummerSlam possibly, but then we do have the returning Street Profits to get into later as well.
Yes, we do indeed. But yeah, like you say, Dominic, it's crazy how much he's come along since he started. Yeah. Like he's not been wrestling full stop for that long, and then when you throw in that these are like, since crowds came back, these are the first times he's ever wrestled in front of a live crowd. Absolutely crazy. Rey must be a very, very good teacher.
Yeah, I think with Dominic, I think the first match or two, you could tell he's a little bit nervous. The first match or two in front of an audience, you could tell like it maybe took a little bit of time to get acclimatized to, as it would for anybody.
Yeah.
As it would, to be fair, for veterans, when you've had essentially a year of silence, it's going to take anybody a little bit of time to like, oh sugar, there's real noise. It's not just piped in cheers or like my family in the crowd. So yeah, props, big props to Dominic.
Yeah, absolutely. But then after this, we got a replay of what happened with Edge and Seth Rollins last week with that sort of odd segment of Seth Rollins attacking him. And then we got Edge backstage, and he was just basically saying what a rotten, selfish bastard Seth Rollins is. But it's okay, because when Seth gets here, he's going to meet him in the ring, and Edge is going to show him what a rotten, selfish bastard Edge can be. Really simple, easy WWE backstage segment, leads on to the rest of the show. Good stuff.
Yeah, it did exactly what effectively it was a replay of the replay, because it was last week's attack like happened during an ad break. So it's like that had to be replayed. And then this was the replay of the replay. And it was just Edge being, the grizzled veteran. That name's kind of already taken. He certainly isn't a grizzled young veteran, but yeah, the grizzled veteran that he is, with that chip on his shoulder. And yeah, it was just fine for keeping things ticking along and getting to the segment that would come a little bit later.
Yep, but then it was time for Boogs. Obviously, playing out Shinsuke Nakamura. Because we're carrying on from the big story of last week, from when Shinsuke Nakamura got the pin over Apollo Crews in that big sort of multi-man tag team match thing. And we were going to get the follow-up and find out what's next for the Intercontinental Championship. And then we kind of found out that this was a number one contenders match, even though he was facing the champion, and that's not generally how number one contenders matches work. Dude, yeah. And then the match went a million miles an hour for a little bit, loads of kicks. It was like looking like, oh, this could be really good fun. And then out of nowhere, the Kinshasa was hit, and then Commander Aziz pulled Shinsuke Nakamura out of the ring for the DQ on the pin. I don't understand this. A, like, it's a number one contenders match, and you're up against the champion, so you've got to beat the champion to face the champion, which makes your championship match for the Intercontinental Champion automatically a rematch. Which I know WWE loves a rematch these days, but that doesn't make any sense. And B, Shinsuke Nakamura still won even though it was for a DQ. So you're basically just making Commander Aziz look like an idiot and not making Shinsuke Nakamura look that strong. Shinsuke Nakamura sold it afterwards like he'd won the match and it was the best thing ever. I don't understand any of this, to be honest. Like, those two people together in a match should be super exciting. Let's face it, Shinsuke Nakamura and Apollo Crews, the amount of talent there, like, that should sell the match itself. Why are WWEing all over this?
I don't know. They started doing this thing three, 4 weeks ago on Raw, where I can't think what they call it, like the contender.
It's just a contendership match.
Yeah, and it's like, it is like the whole thing is, like I said, it was Sheamus and also with, I guess it would have been Charlotte and Nikki, or was it Charlotte and Rhea?
Yeah.
Either way, but it's like the whole point is to get a title shot, you have to beat the champion. It's like, okay, that's just, as a concept, this does not work for me because ideally you want to build to the match, like the title match of like, even if it's not the first time ever, this is like, this is so-and-so's chance at the title, the champion, if it's a heel, they've been ducking him for months, weeks. You really want, you want to see this match. It's a big deal. It's like, oh no, actually, no, I saw it last week and the dude won and the champion lost and here we are. So it's a match you've already seen. It's just, the concept of it does not work for me whatsoever.
My dog doesn't like it either.
We have an eager dog.
Hey, shut up. He doesn't like the idea.
No, and like you said, the fact of, It made Commander Aziz look like an idiot. Shinsuke looked like a bit of an idiot. The fact that he was celebrating like he just headlined WrestleMania and won, sort of thing. It's like, you got a DQ win because of the giant dickhead outside the ring. And it's like the match itself wasn't, this was like the trend then from now on for the rest of SmackDown. Like every match seemed to be like 3 minutes. That was it. It was like everything just went to really brief matches. And this, it did nothing for me whatsoever. And I think any of the steam that had built for Nakamura versus Apollo just being totally put out now. And it's like, okay, cool. If we do get this match, do I really care? Probably not now.
Yeah, that's it. And it's such a shame because there's so many different ways that you could have gone with this. Like Shinsuke got the pin last week. Great. Have Adam Pearce or someone say, look, Apollo, you lost last week. Shin's going to get the title match. Have Shinsuke go up against any one of the other people in that match from last week and go over them with like Apollo Crews on commentary or something, or just with Apollo Crews watching on, and then maybe attack him afterwards if you want to do something like that. There's so many ways that you can do this without just giving the match away in a just throwaway 2 minute match on SmackDown that gains no one anything. It doesn't make any sense. And it's not like the Intercontinental title is lacking of people in that sort of division. Like, it's really hot. There's so many amazing wrestlers in that IC title picture. You could have just picked like someone else from that match and said, this is your number one contenders match. Like Shinsuke pinning the champion has earned a number one contenders match or anything. There's so many ways you can get to this without just giving this match away with a crappy 2 minute finish.
Yeah, and it's like, whenever I see Shinsuke on TV these days, like, oh man, I remember for like a hot minute when they actually, it looked like they were going to go back all in with him when he ran that gauntlet. And it was like, oh, they're going to go Nakamura and Reigns. And all of a sudden in that one match, it was like, well, Nakamura essentially turned babyface in the match. And it's like, oh, right, they're going in with him as a big deal again. And then that just led to Roman Reigns versus Adam Pearce, and Nakamura just kind of dropped back. I know the stories at the time were that was going to be Cesaro, but Cesaro hadn't re-signed his deal. So, but yeah, it's like, I don't know. Anytime they manage to get me back interested in Shinsuke Nakamura, it feels like it's only a week or two away from having that rug pulled right from underneath me. And it's like, oh, right. Okay. Well, and like so often with many WWE talents, it's like, if that's what they think of him and that's how they want to present him, why should I give a toss?
Yeah, absolutely. I will say as well, though, I wrote this in my notes just because it was, I don't know why, but you know all the augmented reality, like 3D stuff that they normally put on the entrances? Not really into it most of the time, but Apollo Crews' massive golden lions that he walks through.
Yeah.
I'm kind of into it, I'm not going to lie. Although there's such a like massive camera nerd part of me that says when you put them on the stage and the stage is super reflective and you don't bother to animate a little reflection underneath them just to make them blend in, really, really annoys me. So WWE, do better.
Yeah, dear Vince. Love from Phil.
Anyway, next we moved on to Finn Balor backstage doing an interview. No, it wasn't. That's getting way ahead of myself. Paul Heyman backstage doing an interview. And he was talking about what happened last week in the contract signing. He basically called John Cena a thief. He talks about the Tampa Bay Schmuckaneers, obviously, insult the local sports team, classic. Mm-hmm. He compared Cena stealing the contract to having Heyman go out there and attack Tom Brady as he's like with a crutch and then sign his contract and takes it over. He basically called the contract a massive joke. He says that WWE is a massive enabler for allowing John Cena to do this. Roman has nothing to say about this. He's not in the mood. And then in a fantastic moment, he turns away from the interviewer and there's Big E holding the Money in the Bank briefcase up, just giggling away to himself. And Big E's just the best. Like, yeah, yeah. Anytime Big E gets basically on my TV these days, I have a smile on my face. And it's fantastic. Love it.
Yeah, I thought Heyman, any time that he's with Big E, he really sells it really well. Like,
yeah.
It's like the kind of, I don't know, Heyman gets across this, like, what is he doing? What's going on? While also being like, and I'm actually genuinely scared because he looks like a threat. It's like, he manages to kind of poke fun at Big E while also selling the fear of like, this dude, if he does want to cash in, that's trouble for Roman Reigns. And I mean, part of me, I think in an ideal world, I'd like Big E to cash in on Bobby Lashley as like a bit of a payback for his New Day brothers. But then the other part is like, yeah, but let's face it, Roman and Big E is the way to go realistically. And I've always a good way to go, to be honest. We've got options. And like you said, anytime Big E is involved in anything, it's like, it has my attention. And this was, even though he was only on SmackDown for like all of 20 seconds, and I don't think technically even said a word, it was just noises. It's like, still, that's like, if I was doing an up and down video or an up and down list, that's getting a big up, that's getting a golden up.
Absolutely. And like you say, as soon as Big E won that briefcase, I was like, oh, now we can cash it in on Bobby, and it's the perfect, like, timing and the perfect situation to go and like, oh my God, you did my New Day brothers wrong. I'll go attack you. You can move Big E over to Raw maybe in the process of it, get some new contenders there. But then all the Goldberg stuff obviously kind of gets in the way and you're maybe going to miss the timing for that. Like if Goldberg wasn't there, the timing would be SummerSlam and it would be absolutely perfect. And that would have been like, oh, WWE have thought about this as a long-term story, but then Goldberg, and then you're like, they're going to just forget about that and never reference it ever again, are they?
Yeah, it's a very tight time window for that. It's like, they could go to Big E after Goldberg's out the way and like, I don't know, do it towards the end of the year, but then it's like, well, I remember when you did this to Kofi 4 months ago. It's like, dude, you've had that briefcase for 4 months now. You could have easily brought this up at any point. Hey, who knows? Maybe we get like a Seth Rollins scenario and he cashes in mid-match during Goldberg versus Bobby. I don't know. That's just come right off the top of my head. So if that happens, you heard it here first.
Yeah. But then again, if Big E is the one to finally topple Roman Reigns, that's also pretty damn great.
Yeah, man. All that stock that you put into Roman for the last, what, year? And Roman...
600 days of not being pinned, is it? Or something?
Wow. Back. Fair, like... hell of a start. And the dude's been absolutely killing it. In everything. I think he really thrived in that, the Silent Arena era, the Thunderdome era. It's like where you could pick up on, it just works so well to establish his character, where you could pick up on the little nuances that he brings to it, of the trash talk he does in the ring. It just worked really well. So then that character's now established for when you're back on the road and you've got crowds there. And it is like all the stock you've put into him, and presuming that he does go through John Cena as well, all these big wins, all the momentum that Roman Reigns has took out of other people like Cesaro, Daniel Bryan, Edge. And it's like, if Big E is the person to beat him, it's like, that's just, again, that brings Big E to a whole other level, and all that stock is then forwarded on, I guess, in the similar way to when Brock Lesnar, obviously not comparing that precisely, but like when Brock Lesnar ended the streak with The Undertaker, or with the purpose of like, well, then when Brock loses to Roman Reigns, it's an even bigger deal. It's just the thing with me is like with the Money in the Bank briefcase for Big E, it's like, because I don't know, I think he has to announce ahead of time, basically do like a Rob Van Dam or a John Cena, where it's, because if you just do your normal run in at the end of a match or at the end of a segment, you don't necessarily get that rub that you would if it's a case of, right, he's beaten Roman Reigns in a straight up singles match, one-on-one. He's stepped up to the big dog and taken down, rather than the underhand way of doing it, which is the norm with the Money in the Bank. But yeah, I think Big E, Roman Reigns, who knows, Royal Rumble, I'm going to say on that. Unless Dwayne isn't available for WrestleMania, in which case Roman probably keeps it all the way through to Mania.
Yeah, that's. I was just going to say that. It's like, I probably completely depends on what The Rock's doing at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
If it's going to be that, there's no way Big E's winning it before. Big E's not even getting a sniff at it before that.
No, it's Money in the Bank ladder match round two for WrestleMania for Big E probably next year.
But then we moved on to another two-minute match, and it was Tegan Nox. She's got a Tegan back. I don't know when that happened, but it's back, I guess. And she was coming out with Shotzi, who is still Shotzi. So one of them got a bit of their name back. I don't know. But they're going up against Tamina. Carrying on the story with them and Natalya and Tamina, although obviously Natalya can't be there because she's been injured and she's going to be out a few weeks with her. I think it's an ankle injury, is it?
Yeah, ankle.
So at least they're carrying on the story, I guess. But again, super short, and guess what? It's a distraction finish, because of course it is. Shotzi was on the outside all the time, and she basically shot the missile thing at Tamina. It distracts her enough for Tegan Nox to get the classic roll-up on her. 1, 2, 3. Tegan Nox beats Tamina. Now, at least they haven't completely binned this storyline and like gone, oh, Natalya's out. Screw it. Nobody will care. So they're carrying it on, so at least I'll give them some kind of credit with that. And they're trying to get around it with just having Tamina come out on her own. But also, why can't people just have wins? Like, what is wrong with just giving someone a straight win? Especially someone who's brand new up to the main roster and you're trying to build as a star in Tegan Nox. Why can't she just get the shiniest wizard and hit Tamina with it and pin her? Like, what kind of crazy world would that be?
That'd help, like, establish her as a player with a lethal finishing move. Why ask those silly questions, Phil? Of course. It's lucky that we're like, this is obviously just an audio podcast, because like, for while you're describing that match, for most of it, I'm just shaking my head, because this was the low point for SmackDown for me, and it's nothing to do with Tegan Nox or Tamina, to be honest. I'm happy as a pig in whatever, that Tegan Nox is on the main roster, whether that's Raw, whether that's SmackDown. Just as a Welshman, it's as soon as like you heard about, well, Nixon Newell, it's like, oh, well, she's Welsh. Let's see what's going on there. Instantly, just that, like, that kinship of like, you're naturally behind her, and then see her get signed with
former
WWE.
WCPW Women's Champion as well.
Exactly.
Let's not forget.
Yeah. So it's like, it's someone who I've kept an eye on for a fair while, and it's just great. And obviously the two times the big knock she's had with the knees. It's just great to see it. So I'm happy with that. The match itself was fine for what it was. Tamina did fine. Tegan did fine. Just the whole distraction thing. It's like, that's the thing, because I was watching it and I had to like rewind and like, did they? Yeah, they did. It's like, so and these are like your baby faces. So she just fired a missile from her tank to distract Tamina. It's like, that's it. You can like, I don't know, you can explain that away if they were a heel team, if Nox and Shotzi were heels. But it's like,
and again, we have the celebration issue as well. Like, they're celebrating it like they just won a massive match at the end of it. And it's like, no, you've just kind of like stole one a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. You could have, I mean, I think I've been quite happy with like the run Tamina's been on the last few months, where it's just like, she's never been the greatest wrestler in the world. She's never been like my favorite wrestler in the world, but it's just like, it's just nice to see. And you can tell like, she's really enjoying herself. And it's like, this is cool, man. This is cool.
And there's nobody meaner.
Exactly. There's nobody meaner than Tamina. So that's cool to see, but it's like, even though she is one half of the tag team championships, there's no stock in her as a singles act. So like, if Tegan gets the win here in clean fashion in 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes, Tamina really doesn't lose anything. So it's just, all that would happen was Tegan would gain some momentum and like, oh, right, okay. Oh, and there's that shiniest wizard that we always hear about. Isn't that a really cool finish and effective? But no, we get the missile, the plastic missile launcher shit. It's like, I don't like the tank, full stop, but like, it just, as for a babyface to win a match this in, I don't know, in 2 minutes in this way, it just, I don't know, it baffles me a bit. It's like, it wasn't even like Tamina was, I don't know, I couldn't understand if Tamina had gone, I don't know, been really aggressive and was like really brutally beating Nox down.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, Shotzi's way of like taking some pressure off a friend. But it's just like mid-match, nothing's really going on. A couple of minutes in, oh, there's the missile. Oh, there's the roll-up. There we go. And then it was, again, like you said, the big celebration where, I don't know, man. I don't know. It just, like I said, this was the low point, and it wasn't anything to do with the two ladies involved in the match.
No, absolutely not.
Stupid idea to do that spot with the tank and the missile.
I like the tank. I'm not going to lie. I do enjoy the tank. As an entrance and thing, it's silly. It's fun. I'm into it. But yeah, not in this situation at all. Like, Even if you want to explain away why Tamina would lose, even though she's like a champion or something, like she's not got her like sort of mentor person, like her best friend by her side. She's not got Natalia, like the person who's brought her up from like absolutely nothing and built her up to be a tag team champion. Like you could explain that away somehow, but just like Tegan Nox hit her with the shiniest wizard, get a win. It's a big win for Tegan. She's still new on the main roster. You've still got to build her up. I just don't understand why it's so difficult.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
But anyway, speaking of being so difficult, WWE then went weird again and we had a backstage segment with Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, of course. And Zelina Vega walks up to them and they're like, shut up, all I want to hear is like your women's championship match is next. You know, the women's championship match earlier in the show that they announced in the Bianca Belair segment and also put a graphic up on the screen saying Zelina Vega versus Bianca Belair, the women's championship tonight. And then I can't remember if it was Adam Pearce or Sonya Deville now. One of them said, like, just because Bianca accepted your challenge, like, doesn't mean the contract's ready. And then Sonya was like, Bianca doesn't make matches. I do. We've got to do this the right way. So tonight you're going to face Bianca. And then if you do win, you get your title match, but it's not going to be against Bianca. It's going to be against whoever wins at SummerSlam and you'll get it after that. So we're having another one of those weird championship contender matches against the champion. And even though earlier in this exact same show, you've already announced it as a women's championship match. And then after this, Zelina Vega thanks them for giving her the match. She's just had something massive taken from her. She should be really annoyed at this. Am I missing something here?
No, not at all. I mean, the other person who should be really annoyed is the poor dude or girl who put together the graphic, the championship graphic of like, you wasted your time. Yeah, you wasted your time putting this graphic together just to go, actually, the match isn't really happening. But like, you're just hoping that this match happens at some point. Cause it's like, I put a whole like 10 minutes of Photoshop into that graphic. Damn it. I want it to be used at some point down the line. But yeah, it was a segment that didn't really make any sense. Which I don't know, you could say that about a lot of what's happened with Zelina Vega since she's returned to the company. I legit don't think she's won a match. I cannot think of her winning a match at all.
Amazingly as well, it makes less sense when you do get to that match later on.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. And I mean, like the segment itself was well presented, I guess, well done. Selena Vega's great on the mic. Again, it sounds just, it's the dialogue that gets me. Like the way that they deliver the dialogue is fine, it's great, but it's just like people don't speak like this. People, and like you said, especially when she's just like, all right, okay, thanks for the opportunity after already having a match previously announced.
No.
And she's a heel, so she should be even more like furious. I get it if she was like, I don't know, if she was some all smiling, baby kissing, granny hugging, baby face, where it's like,
they'd be like, all right, fine, well, I'll show you. I'll go.
Yeah, exactly. You can imagine John Cena doing that, like, okay, well, it's just one more stumbling block, but thanks for the opportunity, I'm going to prove you wrong. But it's like, if you're a heel, you should be like tearing your hair out. It's if like Seth Rollins when he hasn't had any title chances and all he's been doing is going on this rampage. But no, it's just like, thanks for the opportunity, which you can imagine it's like how most of the conversations probably go in Vince McMahon's office all the time. It's like, here's a big pile of shit. Thanks for the opportunity, boss. Please don't fire me today.
As soon as this was going on, this felt like what the writers go through on a weekly basis just within this one segment. Like, they had this thing planned, but then something got taken away and now they don't have any clue how to fix this, so they just put whatever out there and hope for the best. Yep. It's just bad. Really, really bad. There's no upside to this whatsoever. And also, this Adam Pearce, Sonya Deville thing, it's probably... like, were they ever, like, they've been teasing for so long about something happening with these two, and it comes and then it goes.
Yep.
And Deville's still definitely sort of playing the heel side of it, because she's like, oh, Bianca doesn't make matches, I make matches. I don't understand where that whole dynamic is going. I don't know.
I think they just I honestly think, like, it's just they've forgot, or the person who had the idea for, like, the butting of heads between the two, maybe he takes Fridays off. I don't know. I don't know, that writer is just like, he's only there for Mondays, or she's only there for Mondays. It's just like, it's one of those where you just sadly have to just kind of go, all right, okay, cool. And just like, not get too worked up about it. And just like, again, it's like, if they're not caring, if they're not having any consistency with what happens week to week to week with these characters or how they interact, then why should I give a toss? Like, again, it's really? Which I feel like I've said that like three times, I think, already. I'm just for this one episode of the SmackDown.
Talking of people caring, out comes Edge to save the day for a bit. And he just really loves his entrance, doesn't he?
I love it. I love when really he runs like the obviously the hard cam side on the stage, and he's just like, give it to me, give it to me. And it's like, yes.
He's
dude,
having a great time with these crowds. Yeah, soaking life. It up every chance you can possibly get.
Yeah.
He comes out there and it's Edge on fire. He's great. He talks about how Seth Rollins isn't actually here tonight, and that's probably actually quite good, because if he was, I'd probably end up in jail. And like, he talks about how like looking at Seth is like looking in a mirror of his past. And then obviously eventually Seth Rollins appears on the big screen, and Edge is challenging him to a match at SummerSlam, and Seth's like, I don't know, I'll think about it, but you know, maybe you should think about it too. Like, what are you actually getting into? Like, you know what it's like when I stomp like a healthy person's neck. Imagine what would happen when I stomp on the neck of a guy whose neck has been fused three times. Like, your career will be done. What kind of future will you have as like a husband, as a father? And Edge obviously loses it and flips out at this point, calls him a televangelist, Colonel Sanders, obviously.
Great
talks
line.
About, and then he goes through their history. And I love how they've not had that many interactions throughout the course of their careers, but there's actually quite a lot of history that they can build on here. And they're using the old history from back in, was it 2016 or whatever it was, when Edge came in to try and heat up that rivalry and Seth was threatening him. And then Edge was talking about how like Edge eliminated him or helped eliminate him from the 2020 Royal Rumble. He did eliminate him from the 2021 Royal Rumble. And this is all because Seth didn't actually finish the job when he had the chance back in the day. He's just trying to walk in Edge's footsteps, but he can't actually fill him. He's just Edge light. And then it was Seth's turn to flip out. And he's like, I'm not a light version about anyone. It's like SummerSlam, you're on. This is just good stuff between two good pro wrestlers, really.
two pro wrestlers who are happy, comfortable in their skin, know their characters inside out, are, when they're on it, they're two of the best in the world still, even now with Edge. I mean, to be the level that he's at after being out for so long. And again, with the entrance, when you see him coming out, it's like, you cannot watch that entrance and not smile. Even if you're not an Edge fan, it's just like, just the journey the fella's been on. The fact that when he did make his big comeback against all the odds, it was obviously there was the Royal Rumble, but then after that, it was like his big WrestleMania moment was crickets. He had the whole like uncertainty of like, oh, now I'm out for like another 6 months. Will I ever get to wrestle in front of fans again?
It makes me think as well, because like you go back to his retirement speech and just how emotional that whole thing was. And then the moment where he's like, I just want to do my entrance one last time kind of thing. And he like goes back to the back and then they hit his music and he comes out again and he's just there like soaking it up, knowing that that could be like the last time he ever gets a chance to do his entrance. And now you just see him now and he's like, I'm not going to waste any opportunity I have during this thing. I'm going to soak it up every time. And it's like, yes, I can get behind this guy.
It's like, I'm just totally getting goosebumps here. I feel like it's like one of those like, moments where the Rock's in the ring and he just points at his arm with all the goosebumps.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what I'm getting. Just think about this and talk about this. And it was a great back and forth. Both guys hit some memorable lines. I think the Edge of Light line, the Colonel Sanders evangelist line, and then the way Rollins reacts and stirring up the shit by bringing up the family of like, basically, I don't want to cripple you when you've got a wife at home, you got two daughters, and then Edge is flipping out for that. And it was just like I think as soon as there was any slight rumbling early in the year that we might get Rollins and Edge as a possible match at SummerSlam, I'd say 95% of wrestling fans are like, yep, absolutely sold. And then the more and more they interact, and I think it's great. And the fact that they are keeping them apart. I mean, obviously we've had Seth attack Edge, but that's all like that's just to kickstart things and make sure that, okay, this is the path we're going on. But like, yeah. Edge hasn't got to, there's been no comeuppance yet. They're keeping Seth away from him. But it, just think if say, I don't know, if Seth Rollins was WWE champion or Universal champion, Edge might have had like 3 contender matches against him already by the time we get to SummerSlam. It's like, this is the benefit of keeping people apart. We want to see this match. It's something that has never been seen. There's been those brief interactions in the Royal Rumble, but it's all Royal Rumbles. So it's like, just keep them away. I don't want Edge to lay a single finger on Seth Rollins until SummerSlam. You can have Rollins, maybe a sneak attack here or there on Edge, but just there's got to be, you want to see that payback. You want to see the match. You want to see good guy beat bad guy. It's classic wrestling 101. Don't cock it up. That's all.
I think like this, it's simple. I'm glad they're harking back to the past. It's logical. Yeah. It's personal. And it's like, yeah, I want to see these guys fight. Even to the point of, like last week's segment was a little bit weird, but the fact that Seth hit Edge with the camera, and then this week Seth's like going, oh, you should be used to that, and like harking back through Edge's career, he's probably been hit with a camera more than anyone else in the history of wrestling. And it's just little touches like that where they're just harking back on the past and bringing it in and making it relevant. And I'm like, yes, this is how you do it. It's simple. It makes sense. I'm invested. I want to see this match.
Yeah, I think right now, if you look at SummerSlam, that's the match that, like, yeah, that's going to steal the show. If everything goes to plan, that's going to be the best match on the card. That's going to be the one most people are looking forward to. It's like, I mean, obviously, Cena and Roman's big, but I think we kind of all know how that's going to go. Lashley and Goldberg has an appeal to a certain fan base where it's like, okay, let's just hope it's quick. and like, the rest of the card is shaping up nicely, but nothing is getting close, for me anyway, personally, to anything close to Edge versus Seth Rollins. It should be good.
Me too. And speaking of someone who seems to be on a little bit of a roll, Balor was backstage with Kayla Braxton. I thought he had a really, really good night last night.
Yeah.
He was super pissed off at Baron Corbin and what happened last week, obviously, and just nice and simple. Like I said, he's going to like teach him honor and integrity the hard way. And when he's done with Corbin, he has a bone to pick with Cena. Kept it short, kept it sweet. Angry Balor. Love it. And it gets even better later on.
Yeah, it's like this is, and again, like I said, it gets even better later on. This is the Finn Balor that we all wanted to see. There was that, again, that fear, that natural fear that when he returned to the main roster, when he rocked up on SmackDown a few weeks ago, it's like, oh, he's a little bit too smiley. Please don't be smiley, Finn. Please don't be. And he even addressed it himself later on. Yeah. But it's like, this was, I thought the how things ended with Finn Balor, the main event segment, which we'll get to, was perfect. And this was the perfect way to set the stall for what was to come. It was a really good brief backstage moment where it's like, okay, this is the Finn Balor that we want to see. This is the Finn Balor we can get behind. This is the Finn Balor that's been tearing it up in NXT for the last, what, year, 18 months. Great stuff.
Next up, we had the Street Profits returning to SmackDown against the Dirty Dogs. We've never seen this match before. but, I mean, it was fine. It's the Street Profits and the Dirty Dogs. It's Wrestling 101. Montez flying around, gets cut off, takes the heat, hot tag to Dawkins. He goes wild. Ziggles hits his kind of famouser. Dawkins kicks out, but then Dawkins hits the spine buster. Montez Ford hits the frog splash. 1, 2, 3. Done. Couple of minutes again. Fine. Whatever. Move away from this match now.
Yeah, that's it. It's like you alluded to there. It's a match we've seen probably more than any match in the last year. And they're always good matches. It's two very good teams, four very good wrestlers. It was always going to be the Street Profits winning with Montez Ford's comeback. And just the frog splash always looks phenomenal. Shout out to AT Styles. But yeah, the frog splash just looks, the height he gets on it and the way that this time when he lands and then like the extra cell of like the impact where he kind of flips up and rolls, it looks beautiful. It's a thing of beauty. And with the Street Profits back and the Dirty Dogs back on TV, it's like, all right, there's two more teams to add to this two-team division that we've got on SmackDown right now. Because it's like, okay, there's the Usos, there's the Mysterios, I guess you could say Alpha Academy, but that's mainly just Otis and Gable's more the mentor. But like, yeah, SmackDown needs new tag teams or tag teams. And I guess while neither of these teams are new, at least you know they bring something to the table. Keep things a little bit fresh and don't. I don't want to see this match next week or the week
this
after.
This doesn't need to be a feud now.
Yeah, this was fine.
Street Profits back. Let's move on.
Yeah.
But then it was Bianca Belair versus Zelina Vega in this contendership match or whatever the hell they're calling it. I mean, the match itself is pretty good. It was Bianca Belair and Zelina Vega. Zelina Vega did like a pretty good like crucifix submission kind of thing in the ropes, and then was like grabbing her hair and pulling it down, making sure she uses the best of the five count that she gets. And then eventually they got knocked through the outside, and Bianca Belair kind of deadlifts Zelina Vega up into like a press lift. And just at that moment, it's boss time, of course. Out comes Sasha Banks, and then Zelina Vega takes advantage of the distraction and gets on top in the match. And then some good bits, like Bianca Belair like cartwheeling out of a tilt-a-whirl thing. And then she's obviously using her strength, and she hits a handspring moonsault thing. And then throughout the match, Vega is kind of desperately going for the sleeper to try and take out Bianca Belair. And then Zelina powers her through from a sleeper, like into a deadlift suplex, which looks really, really good. And then Vega goes for the like diving hurricanrana on the outside off the apron, but Bianca catches her again and just absolutely slams her into the barricade on the outside, chucks her back in the ring, hits the KOD, Bianca wins. Why couldn't this have just been a women's championship match? You would have had Bianca Belair as the fighting champion, overcoming some annoying foe that got in her way on the road to Sasha Banks, making Bianca look a little bit stronger for Sasha Banks at SummerSlam. Like, you didn't need all the stuff of the bait and switch with the championship match, because Zelina Vega was going to win anyway. Bianca Belair was going to win anyway. Like, Zelina Vega was never going to win this match, so why couldn't it have been for the championship? I just don't understand. The match itself was pretty good.
but then, Phil, if that would have happened, you'd have had like a spare 2 minute segment to fill. What else would you have done?
Just given this match 2 more minutes.
I know, it's crazy. It's just like, all the other matches had like 3 minutes or 2 minutes. You could have just used, you know, give them an extra minute or two. But I mean, yeah, the match was good. I thought it was probably the best Zelina Vega match she's had since she's returned. Yeah. I mean, taking the ladder match out, because ladder matches are always fun. Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was a good showcase. I thought Zelina got a little bit more than I probably expected her to get in this, which was good. She played it well as the heel. But yeah, we all knew Bianca was going to win. It was just a case of, is there going to be any interference from the boss? But it was more of just like, no, Sasha's just there to watch. And
yeah, it was a bit weird with Sasha, because she kind of came out and then, like, Zelina Vega got on top, and then they cut to commercial, and then they didn't really feature her a lot for the rest of the match. It was like, is she still there, or like what? What? I don't know.
No, yeah, it was just it was a little bit weird with that. But yeah, it was a good showcase for the champ. It was a good showcase for Zelina Vega, and like you said, it's like what difference whatsoever would this have meant if it was a title match or not? I mean, yeah. All it does is take away the confusion of that random weird backstage segment. You make your show better by just leaving this as a title match, but it was what it was. I thought as a match, it was good. Like I said, it was the best Zelina Vega's look since she's returned. Yeah. To be fair, the best, I guess by default, it's the best she's probably looked in WWE, because obviously she hasn't wrestled all that much since she was Theatre Trinidad in Impact. So yeah, it was good in that way. And I don't know. Does it add any more momentum to SummerSlam with Banks and Belair? Maybe not really.
Again, I think it might have done if it was a championship match, because you're like, oh yeah, Bianca's the fighting champion. Like, no.
Exactly. Like, that's why Bret Hart would always have TV world title matches, because then it's like, yeah, he's a fighting champion. He's this baby face. And that's the talk that Bianca Belair always does as well, as in like, she'll fight anybody, whatever. So yeah, just it's like, if you were like working on, I don't know, if you say you'd nip to make a cup of tea, or you nip to the loo, or there'd been a knock at the door and the postman had arrived or something, and you missed that backstage segment, you wouldn't have thought any different. It's like, oh yeah, it's a women's title match. Great, great. Yeah. It would have made no difference whatsoever. But if you saw that two-minute backstage segment, it just made things, it muddied the pot when it did not need muddying whatsoever. But nah. Yeah.
Absolutely. But then we had the build to the main event, and we had a little bit of Roman Reigns backstage, and he was kind of just sat there on his own in a room. And then Heyman walks up and was like, Balor versus Corbin is next. And then Roman was like, I'm interested. And then we had the main event. It was...
I like you say he was James Bond there. There was like an eyebrow raise and everything.
But it was Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin. And poor Baron Corbin, man, he can't even afford his own entrance music now.
I even made a note about that. It's like since when did wrestlers start paying for their own entrance themes? And also, like, if that is the case, then why have so many wrestlers got awful entrance music? It's like, if I'm paying for it, I ain't using half of this shit. But yeah, it was just like, I think Baron Corbin, to his credit, he's been great in this role. I think he really gets into it. But like, whenever they've done this storyline before, when they did Shawn Michaels, when they've done it with, I think, JBL as well. JBL with Shawn Michaels, I'm sure he had a similar run. But like, whenever they do this like pleading poverty thing, it's like, no, it's like the dude's probably got, like, with the whole hair thing, it's like, I'm sure he already owns a razor. Like, it's like, that's, there's not like him losing it. And
someone hasn't come and repossessed his razor.
Yeah, exactly. It's like he, and the clothes, it's like, I'm sure you've still got all your clothes. It's not like, oh my God, I've got to give them all away now because I lost my crown. It's like, you still have what's in your wardrobe, dude. It's all right. It's cool. Even if you don't have electricity, you can wash it in the sink. You can wash it in the beach. You live in Florida. It's like, there's just like, it makes no sense. So much of this, like, we're supposed to buy into the fact that this, like, super, I know they tried to by saying like, okay, when I was making big money, I invested it in lots of stuff and I was living this. They've tried to explain it with that, but still, like, anytime they do this, this sort of storyline where they're pleading poverty, no, it makes no sense. But like I said, on the other side of that, I think Baron Corbin's played into it greatly. You can know he's going all in on this, and that's all you can ask, I guess, to earn paycheck, which he isn't actually getting, obviously.
I think that's the key thing. If Baron Corbin wasn't fully on board and just throwing himself into this character, it would never work at all. It's the commitment to the bit that is making it work. And yeah. I genuinely think this is the most entertaining Corbin has been on the main roster since... I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
like, it's entertaining, and it's sports entertainment at the end of the day.
All right, Vince, hey. We're going with that now. Let me guess, Phil.
We make movies.
Yeah.
Hey.
I think with Corbin, I think it could be the most entertaining he's been. I mean, that's not really a high bar. I think the ass kicker, the lone wolf in NXT, that dude I was behind. But then since, I don't know, the main roster stuff, his early days on the main roster were okay. And then it's like, I don't know, ever since it was just like, I'm just wearing like the waiter outfit and I've shaved my head. That any of that sort of Corbin, it's like, I'm good, dude. Yeah.
I am worried with the Corbin thing. I think they either need to make him a bit more of an asshole in this gimmick or turn him face at some point.
Yeah.
You try, like, the building sympathy for this character. And yeah, at first, you're not going to like him because he was this cocky, arrogant asshole spending $6,000 on watches or whatever it was. And now he's this broke guy. Why would I care about it? Like, some rich, broke dude. But, like, as time goes on, the more you have baby faces pick on this character, the more you're angling your baby faces in a position where they're, like, mocking someone for being poor. And it's that's not a great look. And I think something needs to change. Like, there's time to do it. There's a way to do it. But I think it needs to happen soon.
Yeah, I think it seems like, again, they change their mind every week, because there was the first few weeks, like you said, it's going to be, oh, right, okay, he's got his comeuppance, this big braggadocious bellend has lost all his money. Hey, we haven't got any sympathy for him now because he's been such a dick to all these people for the last couple of years. Great. And then it's like, there is this, like, the interactions you have with Kevin Owens, where it's a bit like, all right, okay, well, Kev's a very solidified, solid baby face, whoever he likes. And if Kev's willing to give him the time of day and be okay with him, all right, you start to get a little bit of sympathy for him. And then he goes, the next week, he'll go and be a massive dickhead to people. And it's like, it just seems like they keep changing course. And I know it's obviously you've got the gradual story of wherever this is going to end up. And there's going to be bumps in the road, curves in the path sort of thing, as in like, okay, well, but I just think that now is that it's basically time to shit or get off the pot. As in, if you're going to go babyface, go all in on the babyface and have him. I'm not saying he's a super babyface next week, but you mark it down in pencil, because never use pen in wrestling, but mark it down in pencil. But say in a month's time or 6 weeks' time, he's going to be a babyface. And then you map out how to slowly get to that point where people get behind him.
Totally.
If not, it's either that or just go with him as the prick heel who... Yeah, he pleads poverty 1 second, but then he goes in about how he's got like all these items that people can't afford, and he wants to go fund me. You either that or go in as a heel. I don't know. But like you said, the more I hadn't really thought about that, the more your baby faces are beating him in this current state, it is like, or they're mocking him. It's like, oh, this guy's really poor. Let's kick him while he's down. Yeah. Let's celebrate that he's skinned. Oh, what, you can't afford to even like wash your hair? What a loser. Oh, hair. He hasn't. That's a bit of a dig for me. I didn't mean that. Sorry, Baron, if you're listening. But like, you can't even afford to wash your shoes or clothes. Or whatever, wash your shoes. Do people wash shoes? No, I don't know where that came from, but you get my point.
It's all come back,
wash your shoes. Jesus.
But yeah, they need to just make a decision and go with that. But at this moment, Balor kicked the crap out of him, basically. Corbin came out, he jumped on the mic and he's like, I'm sorry, like last week it wasn't cool, like I'm totally desperate, I'm really, really sorry, like I apologize. And Balor was like, nope, not accepting it. punched him in the face straight off. And then Balor went crazy. Like, Corbin got a little bit of offense, but for the most part, Balor just hit like kicks and punches and stomps and a sling blade and then a coup de grace and got the win pretty quickly. Again, on a night of 2 minute matches, he pretty much squashed him. I mean, Balor looked great in squashing him. It was absolutely fantastic. But yeah, go somewhere else with Corbin next week, or either pick a side is all I'm saying with the Corbin stuff.
Yeah, I think
match was good fun.
Yeah, I totally agree. It made Finn Balor look like a beast, because we've seen how, if this match was, say, 2 years ago on the main roster, it would be a lot more back and forth, and Finn Balor probably would end up losing. So yeah, to see him just decimate Baron Corbin, and it wasn't the fact that he got the easy win, the dominant win. It was the fact that like the aggression that he brought to it and was able to show. Again, like we've seen in NXT, like we saw in NXT the first time around, like we saw in New Japan Pro Wrestling back in the day.
Like just the Balor that everybody knows he can be.
Yeah, exactly. The just what we saw everywhere apart from on Raw or SmackDown previously.
Yeah.
So it was great to have that Balor. Just following on from that, the backstage segment overnight, to then have this match with the kind of laser-focused intensity and aggression was perfect. And Baron Corbin at this point in time, it plays into his story of sorrow as well. So it was nicely dovetailed together. And yeah, just keep those two apart from here on out. But I don't know, I'm sure we're probably going to get a match at SummerSlam, I'd imagine, because...
Yeah, it must be.
Yay.
And then I don't know what else they're going to do with Balor at SummerSlam if it's not...
No, exactly. You'd like to see him have like a big marquee win against somebody... Yeah, and also against somebody who he's not just beating 3 minutes on free television as well.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we're going to get. But no, it wasn't so great for Corbin, but it was great for Finn Balor.
Yeah, and speaking of great for Finn Balor, it got even better for Finn Balor, because he got on the mic afterwards and, oh, this is the Balor that we always knew he could be on the main roster. He's like, and he referenced it as well, which is even better. He was like, 3 years ago, what happened last week? I probably would have smiled and just accepted it. But that Finn is dead. This Finn isn't smiling. This Finn wants Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. And if I need to go through Cena to do that, then so be it. That's what I'll do. Simple, like aggressive. Get behind this Finn Balor, 100%. Love it. And then obviously at that moment, out comes Roman Reigns. Full entrance, took his time getting down to the ring. I love it. And then he got on the mic. He's like, I understand why you're upset, but like, come on. Like, I tried to help you. Like, I gave you an opportunity. And when like when
he's
you're
such
in
a
here,
dick. He's such a great dick.
I love it, but he believes it as well, which is even better. Yeah. And you know, he's just like, you just keep the head of the table's name out of your mouth, and then he hurls the microphone at Finn Balor, smacks him in the chest with it, turns his back on him, and goes to get out of the ring. But as he does that, Balor isn't done yet. He dives at him, pushes Roman Reigns out of the ring, gets his guns out, does a stare down to Roman Reigns. And just as you think Roman Reigns is going to get back in the ring to go and stare down at him, the Usos come in and attack him from behind. But even then, they weren't done building up this Finn Balor, because Roman goes to like leave them all to it, and the Usos gain control. But then they go for the splash. And in what is like just the most perfectly timed thing ever, I love it, he like gets a quick drop toe hold on Jimmy, who goes down to land just as Jay was about to splash him with the big splash. And then Balor fights back. He hits a huge dive over the top rope onto both the Usos. He gets back in the ring and he's not done with Reigns. He gets his guns out again and he's just facing down with Reigns. And then Reigns is like, fine, I'll do this myself. Gets in the ring. But then Balor hits a sling blade and it looks like he's about to be on top of Roman Reigns. And then obviously the Usos come back in from behind, start attacking him, throw him into a Superman punch from Roman Reigns, hits him with the big Uso splash. And then Reigns just gets on top of him and is like pounding him and then gets him in that guillotine. He's tapping out, and then Roman is standing tall at the end. All of this, fantastic. Finn Balor, the best he's ever looked on the main roster, as far as I'm concerned. Roman Reigns, just the massive dick that he is. It's just all of this fits perfectly. The Usos is like scrappy dudes, little guys that come in from behind. Love it all.
Yeah, it was a brilliant end to SmackDown. It was just like, as a way to establish Finn Balor as like just as Finn Balor, and then it was perfect. It was just the fact that to follow up from the dominant 3 minute victory, the squash victory over Baron Corbin, with that aggression and intensity, to then get the mic, cut a promo, call out Roman Reigns, call out John Cena, call out basically himself from 3 years ago for being just this was the prince, and we got the guns. It was just like, this ticks so many of the right boxes, and then to overcome as well both Usos eventually, but then the numbers game of the 3-1, and then obviously he ends up being choked out by Roman with a guillotine. But yeah, big ticks for all of this for me. And it's they've they've established Finn Balor as a top player within these last couple of weeks already. And now as well, it's got you wanting to see him against Roman Reigns, him against John Cena, which is a match that I don't think anybody would have thought would have happened. I don't know, maybe ever. But the fact that once Balor came back to the main roster, you think Cena's probably just going to do, okay, obviously he does the live events that he's been doing, the super shows, as it were.
Yeah.
But you're thinking, yeah, he's got a big match at SummerSlam against Roman, then he'll be back off to Hollywood, and he might have a few TV tag matches or something in between. I didn't expect to be anticipating the chance of, like, maybe we get John Cena and Finn Balor at some point before he leaves, which that's a match I didn't ever, I didn't know that I wanted to see. And now I really, really want to see that. And especially this pissed off Prince who is almost, I don't know, he's not your smiling baby face. He could very easily be a tweener. He's just somebody that's pissed off, wants to win matches, wants to win titles.
And it doesn't matter who gets in his way, kind of thing.
Exactly. If it's like super heel Roman Reigns, so be it. If it's super smiling babyface John Cena, couldn't give a toss. It's like, this is just like, this is very cool. And also it establishes that you now have this top tier player for when John Cena is gone. Because John Cena, we know it's like, I think he's been announced for one SmackDown after SummerSlam. So, but regardless, Cena is only here for a short time, not a long time. Hopefully it's a good time, not a long time. But yeah, once he's out the way, then realistically, if they wanted to, they can return to Finn Balor as a universal title challenger on pay-per-view going forward, leading up to maybe that Royal Rumble match against Big E.
but yeah, hell of a finish. I think the only questions I have with all of this is the timing of the Finn Balor and John Cena stuff is really odd. Like, to mingle those two together kind of muddies the waters. It almost makes me think of the Edge and Roman stuff leading into WrestleMania and then Daniel Bryan getting involved in it. It's that kind of situation, but I also don't see it ending in a triple threat at SummerSlam because that would be really strange thing to do.
Now you've just got me thinking like, oh my God, they're going to stack him, pin him, both of them. That's it. Finn Balor, John Cena.
It just feels like that situation all over again. Yeah. I don't quite understand where that fits in with SummerSlam because you can't not have Roman versus Cena as your marquee match at SummerSlam, surely. Like that, you can't put Finn Balor, as much as I love Finn Balor, you can't put Finn Balor into that. That doesn't make any sense.
And that's maybe where Finn Balor just gets like that another Baron Corbin match at SummerSlam, because you're looking at like, because I think right now you need to, just how good a job they've done these last couple of weeks, particularly last night as we're recording this. You need to build on this momentum. You have to keep presenting Finn Balor like this. And so you're thinking that he needs to be on SummerSlam. You can't not have him on SummerSlam. And it needs to be a match against somebody that means something. And I don't think right now, no offense to the dude, Baron Corbin doesn't mean shit. So it's like, but who else is there? I think that is the match we're inevitably going to get because, I mean, I don't know, a showcase against Cesaro, I'd be all down for that.
I was going to say, when you were talking about possible future for Balor, I was like, it's Cesaro, 100% Cesaro. Down with that.
Please, wrestling gods, please, Vince. But they've done a great job with Finn. SmackDown went off the air with plenty more questions and answers, and it had me wanting to watch next week. Whereas just as a comparison piece, you watch Raw, it goes off the air, it's like, man, I've got to put myself through that again next week. The SmackDown is so different.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that popped into my head, though, is where was Cena? Like, he was definitely backstage at this show because he was in a dark match after the show, which is fine. I'm not against him playing dark matches at the end of the show. So he was there. He wasn't on this show at all. He wasn't in a one-minute backstage segment, just cutting a promo. He wasn't there explaining why. I mean, technically, top babyface in the company, probably John Cena, like everybody's favorite babyface kind of thing, stole the moment from Finn Balor, stole his contract, used almost Baron Corbin's, and like he came in and then he beat up Baron Corbin and then did what Baron Corbin was going to do to Finn Balor. Like, that's not a baby face move. You need to explain that at some point. And Balor was here getting beaten up at the end, and like, couldn't you have had Cena come out and try and save Balor? And then maybe Balor's like, no, like pushes Cena away or something. Like, I don't want your help or whatever. Mm. Something else in there. I just don't understand. I'm sure they'll follow up more on the Cena thing next week, but it was just a little bit odd that he wasn't on this show at all.
I think with last week, I think he got away with it because he was in bright green. That's it. It's like, that's what you need to do. It's like, yeah, okay, he did exactly the same thing that Baron Corbin had tried to do, but he screwed two people out of it. But he was in bright green and jorts, so it's all right. No, I think with this recent SmackDown, though, with last night's SmackDown, I think it's one of those where if you did show, because like you said, he was there in a dark match. He was after the camera stopped rolling. But I think if you show him on TV, that, like, even if it's just like for half a second backstage, then you have to have him run in that main event.
Yeah, because
Super Cena isn't going to let, regardless of what Finn Balor might have said about him, it's like he's going to go. Even if it was, they did do maybe that, the kind of push away, that would have been a great way to end it. But I don't think WWE are ready to go that far into that, into Cena Balor just yet. Yeah. And so I think it's like, if you feature him on the show in some point where the TV viewing audience, the mass audiences know he's there, he's got to be making that run in at the end because he's John Cena. Yeah, that's what he does. He's the good guy. But yeah, it was. At first I thought when he wasn't there, it's like, oh, maybe he's doing like Suicide Squad press still, because obviously it's the premiere of the movie has just happened. So obviously not though, because he was in the dark match. But yeah. Well, either way, I think Big Match John will be back next week. And it's something. Yeah, there's lots to look forward to on SmackDown.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
before we get to SmackDown, there's Monday.
it's like you're going to get around the way.
Swings and roundabouts.
I don't review that one. But yeah, a few other people conspicuous by their absence on SmackDown as well, like Liv Morgan and Toni Storm as well. Like, kind of just...
Yeah, Toni Storm's a weird one.
You can have those minute segments made with Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville that make no sense, but you can't just have Toni Storm cut a promo backstage just to keep her name relevant.
even you could have had her as a temporary fill-in in a tag match with Tamina. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah,
where she could have just been like a fill-in for 1 week and that ties into some longer storyline and I don't know.
We'll have to wait and see with all these things. It's WWE. But it was bookended really well. The end of the show was absolutely fantastic. The build back up of Finn Balor, making everyone on the main roster, or just purely main roster fans at least, realize what Finn Balor can actually be. He can be the prince. He can be this amazing character that you just might not have seen it on main roster TV ever before.
Yep.
But yeah, I loved it in place of that. But yeah, as always, there's a lot of good there, but there's also some very, very questionable stuff that needs sorting out, I'd say.
Yeah, I absolutely agree 100%. It was a mainly positive show. It was, like you said, it was very well bookended. But that backstage segment with Zelina Vega, and the tank stuff, dude. It was just like, when I was watching it, it was just, but we've already discussed what was so wrong with those two. But overall, a very positive show. And again, Fridays make for good viewing.
Indeed. But that was the SmackDown Review podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. Like I say, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast from, and leave us a 5-star review while you're there, because it puts a smile on Adam Wilborn's face, and who doesn't like doing that? But if you want as well, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at FilmMyChambers, and you can follow Andrew
at CulturedLeftPeg.
And you can follow all of us at WhatCultureWWE. Thank you very much for listening. We're not going to be back on Saturdays next week, unfortunately. We're trying to find a long-term solution to move it back to Saturdays, but we'll have to wait and see. But for now, have yourselves a bloody good day. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.